As one of the top administrators at the U of I, Edward Faeser has the kind of credentials I could spend a lot of syllables trying to describe. But basically, his academic specialty is in regional economics. In short, he's a numbers guy. So when he decided to give the campus community an update on the school's response to state budget problems, his talk included a big dose of digits. But that's not all, so hang in there.
We wanted to explain how we were dealing with the state funding shortfall. So from fiscal 16, from the stopgap allocation that was provided, if we account for the amount of money that was directed to the university, and we also account for the permanent spending reductions that we implemented of $49 million annually, after you account for those two things, in fiscal 16, we remain $140 million short. If we look at fiscal 17, we applied additional spending reductions of about $18 million. And then if we take account of the second round of stopgap funding that was provided, we're in the hole for fiscal 17 by $50 million. So if you look at the last two fiscal years in which we've had no budget and instead stopgap allocations, we are short $190 million from those 2 years, and that's after we reduced spending by about $68, $69 million. And to give you a sense of the magnitude of that reduction, $69 million, it's important to realize that in fiscal 15, we received about $236 million in general revenue funding. So in 2 years, we've made a substantial reduction in our spending, and we're still $190 million short from those two fiscal years. We wanted to explain that to the campus to help faculty understand it and to explain how we were addressing that near-term shortfall. I think there's a hunger on our campus for frank discussion about the long-run future of the campus, so I've tried very hard not to sugarcoat what we face, but at the same time to say, you know, there is a path. And if we, as a university, if we stick together, if we find a way to work together, the faculty, the staff, administration, we can find a path to protecting this great university, which I emphasize to people all the time, you don't have more than about 60-some university of this stature in the United States, and worldwide. This is a tremendous university. So we do need to protect it. We're trying to understand and deal with this budget crisis in two ways. One is this short-run impasse and what amount to, if you account for these stopgap spending, draconian reductions in the amount of support for public higher ed. These are unprecedented reductions. You don't simply cut your higher ed by 50% 1 year or 60% in 1 year. I mean, this is not normal. People are talking about states across the country which are reducing their spending on higher ed because other spending is crowding out that spending. But no states have failed to pass fiscal year budgets and then resorted to stopgaps that have led to this magnitude of reduction for public higher ed on such a short time frame. But there's the longer term challenge, which is, how do we deal with the fact that we do have a fiscal crisis in the state of Illinois? We're cognizant of that. We are doing everything we can to reduce our spending, to be as efficient as we can be, to look for alternative revenue sources, and to protect this institution, which has been built up with the investment of generations of Illinois residents who've supported the institution through their tax dollars. In my view, and in most faculty's view, and most deans' views, we don't have an adequate approach to how we budget resources across the campus. The budgeting model was based on different economic circumstances, and we're putting a lot of energy right now into an effort to completely retool that process. That's an enormous exercise, which will take us 12 to 18 months to get done, but I think it'll put the university on a sounder footing. Essentially, you can think of it boiling down to making sure that the way in which you are accounting for what you're doing, sharing information about what you're doing, and making allocation decisions, aligning those things more directly with your academic strategy. That's probably one of the biggest challenges we've faced, is when you have a budget crisis like this and you don't have any sense of where it's going to go, right? There's no obvious resolution of where this impasse will end. It introduces tremendous uncertainty into the system. Deans aren't sure where and how to invest, whether they need to account and cover for this massive shortfall or whether the state will come back and reimburse at some level for that massive shortfall. The university is at risk of going into a kind of a holding pattern. And when you're one of the top 61-2 research universities in the United States, you can't afford to be in a holding pattern. You have to be aggressive. Our competitors, Michigan, Wisconsin, UC Berkeley, UCLA, they're not in holding patterns. And we have to find a way to keep moving forward, even in the face of the budget crisis.
Yeah, I'm wondering what kind of faculty flight you're seeing.
Well, we saw much more significant numbers of departures this year. We were very aggressive in trying to retain our best faculty, but we are seeing increased numbers of faculty being recruited by other universities. We have heard anecdotal evidence of some states targeting Illinois for top faculty because of the budget impasse. And, you know, it's not as simple as saying, well, I could earn more if I go to Texas, or I can earn more if I go to California or to Michigan. I think for most faculty, it's a question of whether the university is on a sound trajectory and can remain strong in the conditions in which it operates. And so I think foremost in many faculty's mind is the state of Illinois' economy and Illinois' politics, and whether they feel that this is a place that will continue to be supportive of public higher education. That's probably the biggest issue we've been trying to deal with in faculty retention, but we have seen larger numbers of faculty leave this year. We're very concerned about the coming year, because it's one thing to have 1 year of no budget. It's another to go into a second year, and then we really don't have a clear sense of how things will resolve themselves after the election. We could be going into multiple years with stopgap budgets, we're told. And we're not standing still. We are dealing with a lot of headwind, but we are making investments. It is significant that we have our largest freshman class. We are drawing strong applicants. We had more applications for the campus than ever. So University of Illinois is a very strong institution, but it can be damaged. One of the worries I have is some people say, well, you're saying it's very strong. I guess you'll be fine if this impasse continues. And I can say, you know, the two don't go together. So I am concerned about retaining good faculty over the long run.
I don't know how many times during this budget impasse I've heard people say, we can deal with almost anything except uncertainty. You know, if you give us a number, then at least we can plan. We can know what to buy, what, you know, what cuts to make, what to keep.
Yes, it paralyzes everyone. You don't know whether you've been slashed permanently, in which case you would be forced to make severe reductions, which would introduce lasting damage, but you would be forced to do it. It would lead to slower economic growth because many people would be laid off and there'd be less money circulating in the regional economy in the central Illinois area. The economic impact on the state of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign is massive, but you'd know you had to do it.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Ed Fazer, provost of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.
But you're not going to do those things if, in fact, the state is able to find a solution that leads to a more stable, you know, revenue path, even if that revenue path is downward.
So I know that you say you're in a holding pattern and that you're making all these cuts, and it's a very complicated situation. So I don't think most people follow the minutiae of it, but they do see the headlines that made Barbara Wilson a vice president. Colleen got a big bonus. You hired this NFL football coach, which I know is out of a different fund, but these are the impressions that people get. How does that play with this $190 million hole?
Yeah, well, certainly the public perception is important, but it's also important to realize that Barbara Wilson wasn't a new position. She was a replacement position. She replaced Christoph Pierre. We have a university system, and the system has a vice president for academic affairs, and Barbara took that position. As that was covered, it seemed to give the impression that that was a new position. It wasn't a new position. It was restructured to provide additional responsibilities. One of the things that Barb will have greater influence over is the alignment of the academic mission at the system level with the resource question, the budget questions. And before, that was not clarified in that position, but it did not create a new position. It simply took one and restructured it. The president's salary is not something that we on the campus determine, but it was something negotiated when he was hired. And all of these salaries, you're paying market rates and competitive salaries. I don't think when you look at our administrator salaries at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign that they are out of line with where our Big Ten peers are. We're stuck dealing with those market rates in many cases, and it sends the message that we're flush with funds, which we're not. But, you know, you have to make sure you have the right people everywhere, all the way up from staff to faculty to administrators, if we're going to take on the challenge. And salaries are obviously a big part of our expense.
One reason that I wanted to talk to you was because a lot of what we hear at the State House are, you know, school officials getting up and saying, this is terrible and we really need money, but they're in a dual role of trying to get some allocation from the General Assembly and at the same time trying not to sound so desperate that no family wants to make the four-year investment to send their child there. You know, so they got to keep this dual face of I'm desperate, but I'm very stable and fine. And it seemed like the presentation that you made on campus was a lot more just here's the hole we're in.
You're right. It has been a challenge to figure out how to navigate the political dialogue. I have had politicians say to me, well, you know, probably nothing will happen until we see, quote, more blood on the floor, which apparently means more layoffs and pain. And because until that happens, apparently some are not motivated to regard the challenge as particularly severe.
Who said that to you?
Well, I'm not going to name names, but I will say that question has been posed to me more than one occasion by different people. And I think this represents a certain mentality that we have going on in the state right now, which is, nothing is crumbling yet. We know that much of the state spending is kind of on an autopilot, and we're spending money that the state is not drawing in terms of its tax receipts. And it's a really troubling problem because no one would manage a business this way, right? No one would take a $2 billion organization like the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign and simply put it into a state of perpetual uncertainty until you see enough damage that you're motivated to act. So yes, it has been a challenge to figure out how to navigate the debate. But my view is this, I'm just going to be honest with people about what we face, and we're going to do everything we can on the campus to be as proactive as we can within the constraints that the state has placed upon us. And, you know, spending a lot of time gaming the politics is something, quite frankly, I don't have time for.
So I think we're running out of time. I know you're busy. Did I give you a chance to articulate the plan going forward?
I think so. You know, let me try to just throw a couple things out there. One is, of course, to make some key investments. The Carl Illinois College of Medicine is important to our long-run growth in terms of our positioning in the healthcare and health research arena. Because of the advent of data science and genomics, bioengineering, this actually positions the University of Illinois to be a very significant player in the healthcare delivery of the future. And that's an important investment for us. So it's why we're very intensely focused on it right now. The Siebel Center for Design, which we believe is going to be really impactful for changing our undergraduate experience and spreading the power of design thinking and design learning across multiple disciplines on the campus, that's a big project as well. So part of our strategy is dealing with our internal budgeting systems, as I mentioned. Part of our strategy is getting even more efficient in our delivery of administrative services, trying to make decisions about what functions should remain at the system level, what should be moved to the campuses, what can be trimmed. All those are part of a concerted strategy to address the challenges we face. But the last thing I'll say is Illinois is one of
time out. Before you do that, when you talked to Beckman, you said something about going into endowments?
Well, yes. So we have a number of sources. One of the things on the campus, we have endowment earnings that have not been spent. These are not a recurring source of fund. I mean, they are recurring, but the amount that has accumulated is essentially a cash balance. And one of the reasons why that happens is that many of the gifts that people give are tied to various things. And sometimes they're tied to things like, I was dealing with one a couple of weeks ago where it was a gift for a endowed professorship, but it only covers the discretionary funds for the professor. It doesn't cover the base salary. So if you don't have the base salary, which you often don't in the current budget climate, you can't spend the discretionary funds. What tends to happen over time with some gifts is they accumulate. One of the points I made at the presentation was, yes, a certain amount of that accumulation is a result of gifts that are narrowly defined and that are hard to target and distribute based on the terms of the gift agreement. But some share is also simply because we haven't been aggressive in spending all of our endowment earnings. I think some departments and schools and colleges may have been holding some as kind of a fund that they could use in kind of a rainy day fund. And what we're emphasizing across the campus is that that is not the appropriate way to steward those funds. So we are pushing all of our units to make sure they're using their endowment earnings to their maximum capacity. That's going to be essential for the university going forward as we rely more and more on philanthropy to fund the institution and as the state dials back.
So you're telling them it's raining now?
Yes, yes. Essentially.
I appreciate you taking this much time with me. I know I feel guilty, so I'm going to hang up.
Well, thank you, Dusty. Thank you for covering the story. And the more information out there for people, the better at this point. You need a solution.
All right. Thanks so much.